It's not a light or easy thing to change a constitution. So should we? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Hey, it's great to be back with you. And if you hear that phone ringing in the background, it's because I forgot to turn all the ringers off.
It just shows that you're a very, very busy individual.
Yes, that's. This is our show for 9/22/18, so September 22nd, 2018. There's our timestamp, and it's very good to be back with you. Lots of issues popping up as we're how many days out from an election.
You're going to make me do math now.
No, let's not.
Yeah, we're far enough out that early voting hasn't started yet. Not quite close enough that voter registration is closed.
Little over 6 weeks, I think.
Right, we're about 6 weeks out.
Yeah, so we're not going to do. There is a noted conservative talk show host who would run these. These scare things. It's just 60 more days until we remove President so-and-so from office. Well, he did that twice, and twice we didn't remove President so-and-so from office. So, it's always unwise to do the aggressive upfront. Here's what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen. I think we'll be the first to tell you that our crystal balls don't work. We can sort of take the pulse of what we see going on, but that doesn't necessarily mean the pulse doesn't necessarily mean what's going to happen. So True. When we get in here and talk like this, we're basically saying this is the way we see it from our perspective. We use a phrase that my mom used to say, I'll bet you dollars to donuts. All that means is, you bet donuts, I'll have to pay dollars. Well, guess what? You can send me all the donuts you want. I'm not sending you any money if I'm wrong. So exactly. There you go. But I will take the donuts.
Well, very good. I thought you were diabetic.
I am diabetic.
And you have a weed intolerance.
Here's the deal. I only break training once in a while for certain kinds of donuts. I don't care for cake donuts. I'm a Long John guy with cream filling and maple on the outside.
I could pass on those, but a good Boston cream. Now, okay, oh, now well. You're talking.
I'll go for that as well.
Well, that's good. So, well, maybe someday somebody will bring us some donuts while we're recording. Doubt it, because since I record in my studio and you record in yours most of the time, the only people who could bring us donuts would be our wives, and neither one of them are going to let us have donuts.
No, that's right. We're 130 miles apart, so it would be very difficult to, unless you've got a really fast helicopter, you're going to have a difficult time delivering to me and then to him or vice versa.
See, now that's the thing, is maybe some enterprising listener out there will decide that it's a money-making venture to do donut Uber, you can do that, like I know Columbus has got this where you can, like, you get a number of restaurants who all agree together that, and if you sign up to this app service, then you can go and order from one or more of these restaurants, and then you pay for it, obviously, with credit card. And they make the food, and then they send it to you via a courier or Uber or whatever. And, it's kind of like having a home-based room service or, not having to go out to the restaurant. You can get restaurant food sent in. Why can't we do that with donuts?
Yeah, I've got a plan for it already. Drone delivery.
Yeah, well, drone delivery is not a bad idea. Now, here's the deal. You send me Buckeye donuts from up there, and I'll send you Amish bakery donuts from down here.
There you go. Yeah, my daughters love Buckeye. My middle daughter lives in Columbus. I think it's Buckeye donuts that she loves. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, and They're really good. There's like two or three locations in Columbus. Yeah, I'm an unashamed plug for Buckeye Donuts, even though I probably don't, I can't eat most of what they've got anymore because it's too much sugar and too much wheat.
Yeah, if you decide to pay us for giving you that unsolicited endorsement, then our address is...
We'll take it in donuts.
Yeah,
right.
We'll take it in donuts, yeah.
Okay, well, enough about donuts and getting us all hungry and getting everybody like distracted here. But Chuck, you know, there is an awful lot that's going on right now. I mean, and you know, normally we would talk about the issue du jour. And of course, everybody knows that the issue du jour right now is the confirmation hearing for Brett Kavanaugh to the United States Supreme Court seat vacated by Anthony Kennedy. And all of the drama and melodrama and less than mellow melodrama that has arisen around an accusation by a woman who says that when they were both high school students, he restrained her, pushed himself on her, held her down on a bed. The story keeps changing. But the point is that that's going to play itself out a little bit more next week. Nothing's happening this week. The Senate judiciary has delayed a hearing because they've invited the accuser and her attorney to come and testify before the Senate. But now they've thrown down a gauntlet and said that she will not testify unless the FBI launches an investigation against Kavanaugh. Well, there's only a couple problems with that, Chuck. Number one, the FBI has already said now twice that there's nothing in the accusations that rises to the level of a federal crime, so therefore they don't have any jurisdiction and they won't do it. Secondly, and this is even more important, Brett Kavanaugh, because he's been on the federal bench, you know, he was a federal circuit, federal district judge, then a federal circuit judge for the D.C. Circuit, and now a nominee for the United States Supreme Court. He has taken six, folks, FBI interviews and background checks. Six times over the last, well, I think he was appointed to the D.C. bench, what, in 92?
Bush administration. I think it was later than that, maybe.
It was later than that. Okay, so it was like maybe
Bush.
2000.
I think it was, second Bush administration,
Okay, so probably in the last 20 years, he's been deeply investigated and interviewed and has background combed through for his elevation to these federal seats already by the Department of Justice and the FBI. Six times, and this never came up. This issue never appeared. There was nobody with any recollection of this issue until now, until he's right after the public testimony and question period is over with, when Senator Dianne Feinstein all of a sudden pops up with this letter that she gets that's forwarded to her from a Democratic congresswoman in California who gets it from a woman who is a social work professor at a college in California, making all these claims about how Kavanaugh was a cad and that, you know, when they were teenagers, he tried to sexually imposition her. Well, even Democrats are starting to realize this doesn't pass the smell test.
They realized it early on, yeah.
And, of course, the romper room of the Democratic Party, people like Kamala Harris, Hillary Clinton, Sidney Blumenthal, and others are all jumping on this bandwagon of, you know, you must stop the, you know, we can't have a vote on his nomination while this is still out there and questioned. But the problem is that, you know, the Senate Judiciary, Chuck Grassley, the chair, has graciously opened the door for this accuser to come forward with their attorney and bring those accusations before the Senate Judiciary Committee so that they can, you know, question and investigate. Oh no, can't quite. It would be the height of impropriety to question an accuser. Chuck, whatever happened in our culture and in our laws to the right of an accused to be able to, question or confront their accusers?
Well, look, it's written right into the Constitution. You have the right to face your accuser in a court of law.
Exactly. Well, and okay, barring a court of law, the Senate Judiciary Committee kind of acts as a legal panel in its own self.
It's essentially in the form of a legal hearing.
You are sworn
to truth by oath. You can be, if you lie in a hearing, you can be tried for perjury. You can be tried for contempt of the Senate, and there are penalties for that. You can be jailed. This is why I was so livid during the whole Benghazi thing, when people refused to testify and that kind of thing. There's such a thing as contempt of Congress. The problem is that the rules were changed at some point, and it's very difficult these days. But nonetheless, it is a crime to lie under oath in a Senate hearing, because it is a legal proceeding.
Right. Well, and here's the point is, now they've doubled down and basically said, okay, she's not going to come and testify until we get an FBI investigation. Well, okay, a full investigation by law enforcement officials of an allegation that supposedly occurred 37 years ago?
Yeah.
How long do you think it's going to take, Chuck?
About 5 minutes, because they're not going to be able to find any witnesses that remember anything.
Well, but even so, Chuck, the point is that no matter how long or how short it takes, their attorneys and their backers on the Democratic Party, they'll always say that there wasn't enough investigation.
Okay.
This is a box trap in order to basically pocket veto Kavanaugh's nomination. It's bunk. I could say stronger words, because it really rises to the level of stinking bovine fecal matter.
And this is essentially a Chinese finger trap. If you stick both fingers in, you'll never get them out without help from the outside. And the fact is, nobody from the outside is going to help you. This is Anita Hill 2.0. If you're old enough to remember the Clarence Thomas hearings, suddenly somebody digs up Anita Hill, who had followed Clarence Thomas his entire career and been hired by him in multiple positions in the government. And suddenly she's like, she followed him around and took jobs from him and was friendly with him. But he harassed her the whole time, sexually harassed her the whole time.
Well, but Chuck, that's the burden that all women have to bear, is that in order to get anywhere, they have to be subject to sexual harassment all the time.
Yeah.
That's the meme.
And you know what? I know plenty of women who, when they are sexually harassed, they just say, well, you know what, I can do this someplace else and this won't go on, and they leave.
I've seen instances where there have been women who are sexual harassers, okay?
Absolutely.
They are intentionally trying to do, well, what in the spy business you call honey traps, in order to get leverage to get what they want.
We all know that gets done. Yeah.
But I'm glad you used the term Chinese finger trap, because I want that visual for people. Without someone else helping you, there's only one way of getting out of one of those traps. And you know what it is? You have to twist and turn until you tear the trap to pieces and destroy it.
Yeah.
That's the other trap here. They're trying to set this up that the only way that Kavanaugh can get out of this is if he turns around and attacks the accuser. Which sets up the new meme of misogyny and, you know, male dominance and patriarchy and everything else that you know is just waiting to come dumping down after this one fails, which it's going to fail, because it is becoming clearer and clearer that, and Chuck, you know, we've talked about this off air. I am more than willing to give the benefit of the doubt on a number of the points of this accuser's story, okay? I am willing to say, okay, for purposes of argument, we'll go there. We'll go there that you don't remember the date or, you know, within a 3-month span of when this is supposed to have happened, and you don't remember where you were. But the problem is, you don't remember what town it was in. You don't remember any details of the room, but you remember who was in the room with you, because she's now, you know, added that, you know, there was another, and one of Kavanaugh's friends was in there with him. And of course, this is very interesting, because the person who's been named has said, this person's crazy. That never happened.
There's a third person, too, that's now being brought into the picture, who also says, never happened.
Never happened.
According to a story I'm reading now, it's at Breitbart, so I always take Breitbart with a grain of salt until I get some confirmation.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You've got to.
Yeah, you have to.
Just like we take a grain of salt with the New York Times and CNN and Fox News and every place else.
I want a box of salt with the New York Times or the Washington Post or the Boston Globe or CNN or PBS. I don't want just a grain. I want a box. But that being said, here's one of the problems. If Blasey Ford was not really thinking about doing anything about this, remember, Kavanaugh got named months ago.
Yeah.
Right?
It was months ago. Well, supposedly this letter that she wrote to the congresswoman, Feinstein has had in her possession for
since July. Yeah.
Since July, she's had it. Now, of course, the hearings took place right after Labor Day in September, so she had had plenty of time to review, vet this, and bring it up in the hearing if there was... but we wait till after the hearings are over with, when we know we're scheduling a vote, and then we drop it.
There's another issue. Blasey Ford, if she was... They weren't planning on dropping this as a September surprise. This is one of those things that was held in a holster, sort of like you have your gun in your holster and you're only going to pull it out if you think you absolutely need it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It was becoming clear. There were a lot of Democrats who were like saying, look, there's nothing we can find wrong with the guy. The ABA says American Bar Association said he's highly qualified for the job. He's got a sterling track record as a federal judge, even though they don't agree with his judicial philosophy. Nonetheless, he has a very good record as a judge. So what do you have to do? Well, you have to smear his at this point, the only thing left to do is to pull a Clarence Thomas and to smear him. If she wasn't planning on doing this, why did she take a lie detector? Why did Blasey Ford, the woman who's making the claims, why did Blasey Ford go out and take a lie detector test? A privately administered lie detector test, which folks are extremely suspect. Privately administered lie detector test in August.
That's a good question.
It's obvious to anybody who's paying any attention at all why that was done that way.
Of course.
It's to have the ammo ready if a character assassination becomes necessary. And apparently a character assassination has become necessary. There's another issue here. There are people out there in the press who are bringing up the specter as we have of Clarence Thomas, except they're talking in terms of saying things like Clarence Thomas is a serial sexual predator. To make that claim, you actually have to come up with some proof.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not in the world of modern journalism. You simply, if you'll recall, it's not the facts, it's the seriousness of the accusation. That's what really matters. It's not the fact that there is nothing to back that up, it's the fact that the claim has been made. And therefore, since the claim has been made, you have to defend yourself. Nope. Give me some data. And the same thing here, in this case with Kavanaugh. There is absolutely no trail of a sexual predator in Kavanaugh. None.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't one. The fact is, if you are a sexual predator, you leave a trail. You've not just done it supposedly once. You've done it over and over and over and over and over again. And there will be people crawling out of the woodwork to say, yeah, this is the case. Here's the problem. They've only gotten one person to crawl out of the woodwork and say this is the case. And the fact is, she can't come up with any kind of detail at all, other than it happened sometime 37 years ago at a party someplace, and she doesn't remember where. And she doesn't remember who all was there. She doesn't remember the house. She doesn't remember anything. Now, what does the compliant press do? I've been seeing stories. There were wild parties.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, because I'm even looking, you know, you mentioned Breitbart. I'm even looking, and they even use the phrase drunken gathering in a Montgomery County, Maryland home. And it's like, okay, wait a minute, stop. Okay, first of all, there's nothing that's been corroborated by anybody that there was a gathering to start with, or that even writers for supposedly conservative slash libertarian news sites, and they basically have helped the left. Let's go ahead and use their
let's use their narrative.
Let's go ahead and use their claim and their language without bothering to say alleged gathering, allegedly people were inebriated, blah, blah, blah. You don't know, and you never will really know. I mean, it's a he said, she said kind of thing. And of course, in this age of Me Too-ism, the she said is all it takes in order to basically ruin someone's life, even if they're not a misogynist or a serial molester or a sex fiend. Okay, let's just be honest with it. This is the radical extent of the uber feminist movement. When anybody gets in their way who doesn't share their belief and views, it is perfectly legitimate, morally acceptable to destroy them personally, professionally, ethically, and one would say even morally, to get what you want. Is that the kind of thing that we want, Chuck? That's the reason why I opened up with this whole idea about the fact that we have a constitution and we have provisions in those constitutions that allow accused individuals to be able to cross-examine and question and depose their accusers in order to defend themselves. Now, how many people out there, Chuck, who are crying for us fixing all of our problems by having a convention of the states or an Article 5 convention or an amendments convention, whatever moniker they're putting it on there, how many of those folks would like to see those provisions eliminated?
Well, hopefully none of them, but...
Well, but we know, but, well, the ones who are calling for the convention, yes, you're right. No, hopefully none of them would want that. However,
yes,
as we're sitting here looking, who are going to be the type of people who are going to be making the decisions if one's called?
Okay, let's be honest about this. The vocal people out there calling for a constitutional convention don't understand the Pandora's box they're opening, because leaders at the top have told them, don't worry, it's not Pandora's box. The people who want to are very much, you'll notice they're sitting on the sidelines not saying anything about a new constitutional convention. They're not talking about it. Why? Because the conservatives are doing all the heavy lifting. Okay?
That's true.
And they know that once a constitutional convention is called, they'll be in control of it. And the reason I say that right up front, and I know, oh, no, we won't. Oh, no, no, liberals will not be in charge. We'll be in charge. No, you won't be. Because you don't seem to understand who is...
Oops, sorry about that.
Yeah, you don't know who is in charge of setting delegate criteria. The fact is, we've talked about that over and over and over again in our presentations on this issue. And if you want us to give a presentation to your group, we'll be happy to do that. We'll be happy to come in and go one-on-one with a convention of states or anybody, because I've done that before, and frankly, walked away with the convention of states guy with his tail between his legs. The reason why? Because we have the facts about how conventions work. Now, the fact is that the left is sitting there and letting the conservatives, well-meaning and unfortunately not very well educated on conventional or on convention mechanics, to get the call done, but they're already talking about, they have their agenda set for the Constitutional Convention, elimination of the Electoral College, the possible elimination of the upper house. That's one of the things that's floating around, is getting rid of the Senate and going to a parliamentary system. You know, in England, they have the House of Lords, and the House of Lords basically is a bunch of guys who have nothing better to do to show up and it's a debating society. They don't do anything and haven't been able to do anything since, the early 20th century, when the king somehow got talked into signing a bill to strip the House of Lords of their power. But nonetheless, that's what we're looking at. They're going to change trial structure. They're going to change the list is as long as your arm. Require union membership to be in certain jobs,
mm-hmm.
instead of taking a state by state or even my personal ideas factory by factory. If the workers want to organize, they organize. If they don't want to organize, they don't organize.
Well, absolutely. I mean, and that's kind of what I'm getting at with this is, if we get something like that, it's going to be the people like the Christine Blasey Fords, psychology professors. It's going to be people like Senator Dianne Feinstein. It's going to be people like Senator Sidney Blumenthal or Cory Booker or Kamala Harris, who are going to be the ones who are going to be sitting in the seats making the calls.
Well, exactly.
And or it's going to be radical feminists who are going to say, that whole thing about your accuser, that doesn't work anymore in the Me Too world because, Senator Hirono from Mazie Hirono from Hawaii basically said, "I just want to say to the men in this country, sit down and shut up."
Yeah.
In other words, you can't raise any kind of questions, allegations, or doubts about a woman saying and making a claim that happened 37 years ago.
And unfortunately, this is the problem with the Me Too movement. Why the Me Too movement has seriously lost momentum, and there's a reason for that.
Come to find out that one of the main accusers of a guy turned out to be a sexual predator herself.
Asia Argento, basically, it turns out to be a sexual predator herself, predating
of underage boys.
On 17-year-old boys. How traumatic was it for him? I don't know. At 17, if,
a 37-year-old woman decides that she wants to take you to bed.
Yeah,
that's what you're dealing. But okay, but even so, the point is, he's still underage and is not legally able to make those kind of decisions for himself.
Exactly, is he impressionable? Yeah, it depends on the state, but 17 is usually inside most age of consent, but some states have a age difference a qualifier on that. And at the time, I think she was 37.
37, yeah.
And wow, there's a 20-year difference there. That being said, she was a sexual predator. It's not just her.
I'm not trying to, downplay or soft pedal the fact that Harvey Weinstein took full advantage of his power and his position in Hollywood in order to, score easy marks and basically rape and molest women and probably men too, because I'm sure his casting couch was, nonpartisan in that respect.
You have to be careful about that kind of accusation, but ahead.
You're hearing more things come out that it wasn't, that there wasn't just women. Of course, you got this Kevin Spacey issue and things like that.
Exactly.
But the whole point is that, yes, there are people who will decide because they are so selfish, because they're so self-centered, because their self-esteem is so high, Chuck, that nothing's off limits to them. Nothing's wrong for them to do. If they're in a position of authority, why not use the authority to get what they want? And if what they want happens to be sexual favors from somebody who's coming in to ask them for a job, well, that's perfectly legitimate in their moral calculations because, that's how it works. That's how it's played. But you know what? That's not how it's played. And it's not how it's played either on the other side of that coin with the radical feminist movement. I'm sorry, Mazie Hirono, the Democratic senator from Hawaii, you're completely wrong. Basically just to say that no man can speak up and say anything when a man is accused of heinous acts that are not backed by anything other than the individual's claim of impropriety. There's no evidence. There's no corroboration. There's no track record. There's no history of the individual, acting out in any way, anytime else with anybody else. Don't tell me to shut up and step up.
Right.
Why don't we get back to you're innocent until proven guilty? You get to face your accusers in a court of law or in the front of the court of public opinion or in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee. How about we get back to common sense and the rule of law? Because that's what's being cast to the side here. So that's the reason. That's one of the reasons why when I hear these folks with the Article 5 conventions of states, blah, 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 amendments, convention garbage, I sit there and say, are you not paying attention to what's going on around you?
Look.
Now, there is somebody who is paying some attention to what's going on around us now and what was going on around us in 1787. And we've got an article we're going to put up on the website. It's by John York, who is a policy analyst for the Heritage Foundation. And this was published on the Daily Signal website. And I saw it. I read it. I was sent it to you. And I said, oh, boy, we have got to talk about this.
Yeah.
Exactly. And he opens up this whole idea where the title of his article is Why We Couldn't Create Our Constitution Today. That's enough right there. And he wrote it on Constitution Day, which was Monday, by the way. The 17th was here in Ohio and nationally what we celebrate as Constitution Day. You wouldn't know it because the banks don't close, post offices don't close, schools don't shut down. And even when the schools are open, they're probably not teaching anything on the Constitution on Constitution Day. Some might, and bravo to them if they do. And hopefully they teach it the way it actually is written and not the way they feel about it. But he starts off this article, Chuck, by saying Americans should be thankful not only for the rare genius that assembled in Philadelphia in 1787 to draft the Constitution, but for the unique circumstances under which they met. Now, I agree with him. Were those men demigod status? No, they weren't. You and I have talked about this before. They were failing, sinful, you know, saved by grace in many instances, individuals who had self-interest and who had regional interests and state pride and everything else all coming into the mix in order to try to figure out a national constitution. They met in circumstances basically when we had just gotten through a breaking away from another political power in a bloody and a protracted war, and the governing document that we had put together in order to kind of put these independent colonies in some form of unity was showing that it had some major failings, especially with the interstate commerce issues. And so they came in. But he said, and he's basically saying that, you know what, not all moments in time are ripe for founding a nation, nor is every citizenry equally prepared to receive new modes and orders. The founders' time and generation presented just such an opportunity. Our time would not. So he really is getting into this whole idea of we got to be extremely careful about the idea of wanting to call for opening up and amending or changing this document that we have that has allowed us to have a single consistent form of governance for this nation for 241 years, right? I can't do I'm having trouble doing the math. So 1787.
Yes. Yeah. 241.
241. Okay. All right. I guess get the math.
231.
Okay. 231. Maybe it's 240 something from the Declaration of Independence. But okay.
Yeah,
it's 240 something from the Declaration of Independence.
It's 243. From
243 from the Declaration, 231 from the Constitution.
Yes.
But the point is, we've had one single form of government in that length of time, Chuck. And we've amended the Constitution before. 27 amendments, one, you know, 10 of them in one shot, and then the other 17 piecemeal, one or two at a time. It seems to work out fairly well. Now, you and I would argue that some of those later amendments, past 12, radically changed the environment and the landscape of how the relationship between a central government and the states and the people operated.
Think about it this way. Up to 12, the government power was restricted. After 12, government was given power.
Yeah, it was expanded. That's right. So he talks about Professor Sanford Levinson at the University of Texas, who basically are saying that, you know, our political dysfunctions today are all because of the Constitution. And what they're basically saying, and Levinson's a liberal, okay, let's lay it out. Levinson's a hardcore leftist, and it's because he says that one of the dysfunctions is President Donald Trump's near dictatorial powers with regard to mobilization of the American military, Doesn't every president have that?
Well, I was
going to
say,
commander in chief.
That's called being the commander in chief. That's the whole purpose of that clause in the Constitution is so there can be an instantaneous response to an act of war.
Uh huh. Okay. The next point: control of immigration. Okay. Wait a minute. Stop. If I remember correctly, the immigration and naturalization in the Constitution falls under the auspices of which branch of government?
Congress.
Thank you. It's Article 1. It's not Article 2. And you know what? The president has the right to veto laws that are passed, or you know, bills that are passed by Congress to go into law if he feels that they are unconstitutional. So 11's been whining about that. And then the next point, the imposition of tariffs against one and all countries around the world. Chuck, I'm sorry, I missed the memo. When did we put tariffs on all countries around the world?
Yeah, we didn't.
No, but the one country we have where we are levying tariffs against now in order to bring them to the negotiating table to change around trade agreements that have basically hamstrung the United States for decades is China.
Yeah.
Another $220 billion in tariffs are being levied this week against Chinese imports. And I don't blame them, okay? Okay, folks. Okay, if you go to Walmart, and I'm sorry, but the cost of your plastic grocery, you know, crisper drawer keeper has gone up 10%, so what? Either find another way to store it or pay the 10%, but that 10% tariff blocking Chinese from dumping on the American market so much and driving the prices to lower than anybody can compete with domestically opens up domestic opportunities for creating businesses, creating jobs, strengthening the economy, increasing the tax base. And the fact that, honestly, ever since Richard Nixon, we've been holding the short end of the stick on trade with China, and they've taken full advantage of it to enrich themselves. I would say illegitimate.
Well,
I guess it can't be illegitimate because we agreed to it stupidly. But this president has now finally decided enough's enough. And as the leader of this country, he, and through his State Department and the Department of Commerce and everything else, has a fiduciary responsibility to the American people to get out of these bad agreements and get into ones that are more beneficial to the United States interests.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring that up because what the inclusion of China into the World Trade Organization has done is essentially allowed China to set up a sphere of operation in Asia to try to actually close us out of that market.
Yes.
And they've done a pretty good job of it. In fact, they've done a better job than the Japanese did. The Japanese tried to create something they called tried to do it militarily, but they tried to create, the plan was to create this thing called the Greater East Asia Coast Prosperity Sphere.
Right.
Well, guess what? China's been able to do that with economic warfare. But they basically have been able to use their cheap labor and their giant pools of cheap labor to come in and, produce goods. They've adopted enough economic fascism to make their economic system viable enough, just enough capitalism to make it work, so that they can use it to undercut American labor and market. And that's exactly what they have done. Also, it's not just American; it's European as well. But remember, Europe for some reason doesn't trade as much with China as we do. And it's essentially because we have such a huge consumer pool. The problem is our consumer pool was shrinking for a time. Why? Because Chinese industry was coming in and taking all the manufacturing jobs. And the ones that weren't going to China were going to Mexico and Central America. The reason that the tariffs, people are talking about why did Trump want this tax cut and what this just completely wide angle tax cut, both corporate and individual tax cut. The answer is simple. He knew that there would be some effect from the tariffs imposed that the prices would increase. He wanted to offset that because he knew that the prices increases would be offset by increased employment. So the next time somebody tells you Trump doesn't know what he's doing, oh yes, he does. He knows exactly. Absolutely. He knows exactly what he's doing. He understands how a tariff war works. Now,
but again, when you add the voices of somebody like Levinson, or let's talk about the New York Times, as York brings up in his article, that weeks after the 2016 election in which Trump won the Electoral College but lost the popular vote by a very small margin, the editorial board of the New York Times demanded that we replace our antiquated system of presidential selection and impose direct popular elections. Okay, Chuck, so there's another piece. Okay, so we're going to take – if you think about it, if we open up a convention and people like this get in charge of it, so what we're going to have is we're going to have some commission controlling the military.
Exactly.
instead of the commander, president being commander in chief. Immigration control would basically be, maybe we wouldn't have any controls anymore. We'd just say open immigration, open borders, and we wouldn't do anything with tariffs. We would just basically hand away all of our goods and services to anybody who comes along and pay whatever they demand of us, because our Constitution won't allow us to do it anymore. We get rid of our system of voting. Direct popular elections. Well, you know, Chuck, you and I have talked about this on the program before. Hey, okay, since we're moving to motor voter and, you know, internet registration, why don't we just have a, popular election where a plebiscite of votes on the internet determine who our leaders are?
And that is already being discussed. The problem is there's a constitutional block to it. How do you
get
rid of a
constitutional block to it?
How do you get rid of a constitutional block? There's two methods. You can either,
but not if people like a University of Texas law professor becomes delegates to a convention,
that's,
or the New York Times backed, you know, legal or constitutional experts who write articles for the New York Times for their editorial board. That's what's going to happen, okay?
Okay, look, the New York Times is mad because there were two locales that gave Hillary all her margin, the whatever it ended up being, 500,000 votes or whatever. It's New York City and California.
Yeah.
Because what they want is for two states to basically, essentially two regions of the country to be able to lord it over everybody in the middle. And the fact is that what the Electoral College does, and people don't understand, really grasp it, it's a view of direct democracy versus representative style government.
Right.
And why is direct democracy bad? Well, think about it. The old cliche is about 12 wolves and a sheep deciding what's for dinner. Well, it's also about people on the coast deciding what's good for those of us here in the Midwest or in the far West. The answer is, thank you, I don't want Los Angeles to decide what it is I can and cannot do. They don't understand me. They don't know me. They don't know my needs. I know my needs. I want local representation. And honestly, the first thing the states ought to do is kill off the winner-take-all system for the Electoral College. But the fact is, states like Ohio even went... the rural population came out and overwhelmed the city population, which is exactly what's supposed to happen. It's supposed to be a safeguard so that the heavily populated centers don't lord it over the more sparsely populated farm and, you know, low industrial areas.
Right.
That's exactly why this was done this way. And in fact, it was demanded at the Constitutional Convention by states like Rhode Island. Well, Rhode Island wasn't there. By states like Delaware, states like Maryland, states like Pennsylvania, who had low populations. Although Philadelphia obviously had the capital at the time, but Pennsylvania was not the same state as it is now. Essentially, Pennsylvania was a little strip along the east. It was went over to the Allegheny Mountains, and there was nothing past that. I mean, it was all claimed territory, but nobody lived there in 1787. That being said, This system is actually ingenious because what it does is it protects the rights of the minority over the lordship of the majority. It's proportional representation. It breaks populations up into smaller things and forces them to vote as that small group rather than a giant block. And people who want to have things a certain way, because let's face it, mobs can be manipulated. They want mob rule. And that's what democracy is mob rule. You get out in the streets, you throw firebombs, you riot, you wear shirts that say punch Nazis, and you go around and physically attack people who you don't agree with politically. Call them Nazis, call them names. All you have to do is look at even in the church, Barry, I'm very disappointed in the church of what's happening with the social justice gospel. And I realize that could get me in trouble. Yeah. Has the church been right on it when it came to, protecting the rights of the downtrodden? No, they have not. Why is that? Because the church, unfortunately, is in the hands of human beings.
True. This is true.
It is Christ's church, and people have their prejudices. Now, does that mean we flip it on its head and make it the exact opposite? No. You know what I always said? I've known people who were involved in kind of cultic style churches.
Right.
And they go over to the far, far, far reach of the pendulum. The pendulum swings all the way to one direction. Suddenly they wake up one day and they realize that they've been had. So how do they handle it? They go to the far reaches, the other direction of the pendulum, to make up for it. And I'm like, that's not balance. Balance is when the pendulum is in the middle. That's balance.
Yep, that's true.
And the fact is, getting people to go from the far right to the far left and come back to the middle is very difficult because people get hurt on the far right and the far left. So they can't. I can't go back to the middle. I have to go to something entirely different. I have to go to a completely different clock mechanism. No. Come down in the middle. And that's the problem we run into. Right now, this whole social justice warrior thing is the pendulum swinging all the way to the left. Well, how's that going to work out? Who lives on the left? This is what I told people about the emergent church. I go, you don't want the stuffy old, all the cliches about the stuffy old church and that kind of thing. So what would they do? They got involved in the emergent church. Who was going to change everything up? And I go, look at it at its core. You don't seem to understand what the underlying principles and foundations are. And I'd point this out, and I'd pull the tarp up, and I'd say, see, this is what's going on. Oh, you're just trying to protect the status quo. No, I'm not. I'm not. I have problems with the modern church as well. But this is not the right way to go. What did it turn out? I was absolutely right. The emergent church, which essentially is dead, but the reason it's dead is because so many churches have adopted the principles of the emergent church. And that's why how we got over to the modern SJW movement inside the church. This is the same thing. Believe it or not, this kind of thing. We just talked about the church, but it's the same kind of thinking why we're getting into trouble in our government. It's the same kind of attitude. It's this lack of understanding about how the pendulum swings and why being ultra left or ultra right doesn't work.
Yeah.
You have to take your aim to be in the center. Now, does that mean that everybody's always going to be in the center? No, it doesn't. Some people would say I would be to the ultra right, and I'm like, not in these matters. I'm not. Because I don't even know what you really mean in some cases by the ultra-light, right. I know what the ultra-left is. I'm not sure. One of the problems you run into, Barry, is these scales change. I've actually read in articles, where I'm going to paraphrase, but they'll say that the actually changed the way we look at things and move the scale to the left or the right. The scale can't move to the left or right because those are absolute positions. Left is totalitarian government. Right is anarchy. In my view, I've always gone to the 0 to 100 scale of government. Well, who's on that? That means that, for instance, Nazism, fascism, and all that thing are a left wing movement. You say that to people, they go nuts.
That's not what they've been trained to think.
No, they are a totalitarian movement who just simply has the fascists in Italy were nationalists, but they weren't necessarily racists. It was Hitler's Germany who got that race thing involved. And if you look at its core was a cult movement. One thing you can't say about Mussolini was that he was a cult leader. If anything, he was an agnostic, except I don't think he was. I think he was a practicing Catholic. Hitler had grown up Catholic, but he had attached himself to some weird, really oddball pagan stuff that had popped up in the late 19th century and early 20th centuries in Germany. And it was pagan to the core, anti-Christian. He knew how to speak the language because he had been raised as a Catholic. But he also had nothing to do with the Catholic Church and, in fact, attempted to wipe out the Catholic Church. So that's kind of what I'm getting at. I realize I've gone off the topic a little bit. But we have to think about these things in those terms. Because sure. it is a perverse way of thinking about these things. And what we've seen in this article in the Daily Signal, how the stars aligned for the founding of America, is the fact that the guys on the left that we've quoted want to take that pendulum all the way to the left. They want to completely dismantle the system.
Right.
And how many times, you know, you ask people what kind of government system they have, they'll tell you democracy. No, we don't live in a democracy. We live in a republic. And there are different kinds of republic, but a republic is a rule by law. And let's go back to the Kavanaugh thing for a minute. What does this woman not want to do? Suddenly she said she'll testify on Monday. Now she's trying to back away. Why? Because Monday is too short to basically gin up some other evidence.
Right.
It's too short. And she knows she's going to get caught and going to get beat up over her lack of the ability to really come up with any detail. Now, why do I have a problem with this? I'm going to tell you why I have a problem with this. And it has nothing to do with my sexuality or anything. It has to do with trauma. In 1981, I was in an automobile accident.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you where, when, what happened during the thing. I mean, this was traumatic. I mean, I carry the scars to this day, the scars and the physical issues. The accident happened on March 16th, 1981. I was on Michigan Route 66, about 5 miles south of Hastings, Michigan. Happened somewhere between 8:30 and 9 p.m. at night in March, which tells you it was dark. I was hit by a drunk driver. I have a recollection of what happened up to about a minute before, which is kind of odd. You know, sometimes you get retrograde amnesia from a physical injury. Mine goes back about a minute. I remember what happened up to about a minute before the accident, and I remember a lot of things after I became awake. I remember the trip to the hospital. I remember having my smashed left arm. My arm was mangled. My jaw was mangled. My left hip was broken. I had 3 broken ribs. My jaw was smashed into little bits, although I kept all my teeth for a while. So I remember all these details.
Right.
I can take you to if the farm is still there, I can take you to the farmhouse where I ended up in the ditch. Now, some people block that kind of stuff out, and I understand that, but that's usually after a head injury, which obviously I had a smashed jaw, and I picked glass out of my forehead for, oh gosh, I kissed the steering wheel and I also kissed the windshield, and I picked glass out of my head for about 6 months, and I still have a scar that my doctor is convinced is skin cancer. And I go, it's the slowest growing skin cancer on the planet. It's been there for 37 years. You know, it's a dark spot on my head. And I said, it's going to remain there. It's a scar. People can have... Now, this woman, this Blasey Ford, mentioned this supposed incident to no one before 2012.
Right.
2012 was the first time this came up, and it came up in a marriage counseling session. Okay?
Yes.
You normally don't keep that kind of stuff to yourself for over 30 years.
Right. Now, I don't have any idea how long this individual had been married before this counseling session, if it was something brand new, if they'd been married for 25 of the 30 years. I mean, you don't know. But you would assume that had it been a long-term marriage, that at some point prior to 30 years after the fact, it would have come up.
You know, my daughter and I were talking about this. And I'm like, okay, it's 37 years ago.
Yep.
If we started disqualifying men for jobs on the basis... let's put it this way. I'm not conceding that this actually happened with Kavanaugh, because I don't think it did. His character seems to be very solid. But the fact is, if we start disqualifying every man who ever made an aggressive move toward a girl when he was 17 years old,
yep,
then there are no men qualified for any job. And that is the Me Too movement's point, I think. The point they attempt to make. That no man is qualified for anything because, well, let's face it, Barry, who's aggressive in almost any kind of a sexual matter? Who generally is the aggressor?
Well, supposedly the guy.
In most cases, it's the man. Now, am I saying necessarily that there are no women who don't make it obvious that they wouldn't mind being aggressed upon? No. And in fact, are there women that'll make the first move? I can remember in high school, I had a girl who used to call me all the time. I wasn't interested, but she would call me, ask me to go here and ask me to go there, and I knew where this was going, and I wasn't interested, and I would just say, thank you very much. I'm very flattered. I'm not interested. So, yeah, are there aggressive women out there? Yeah, there are, and we have to admit that as well. But for the most part, you'll find, except in the case, in the modern cases of women like Asia Argento, who apparently took the first move, and it's not that rare anymore. So we have to be careful about how we think about these things, and we have to use some kind of common sense as we look at these situations, because people don't tend to forget the details on this kind of an event. Unless, I'm going to be quite open and honest with you, unless there are chemicals involved. Alcohol, drugs,
yep,
that kind of thing. In which case, all kinds of things can happen. All kinds of things. And nobody can recall any details.
Hmm. Yeah.
So we honestly don't know. And apparently we're not going to find out, because this woman is basically has said first she would testify on Monday. Now she doesn't want to, without the FBI getting involved first. Well, I think we know what that's about. We're basically out of time, but I think we know what that's about. They're hoping that someone high up in the FBI who still has it out for Trump will want to kill off Trump's nominee for the court and get involved. I think those days are over. Nobody's buying into that right now. And the FBI is probably looking at it and saying, A, this isn't our bailiwick because there's no federal crime involved. And B, we don't want to touch this with a 10-foot pole in the current political atmosphere.
No, that's probably true.
Yeah. Show up to the hearing and testify.
And the current, and just remember for everybody to kind of tie in what we were saying, the current political atmosphere is where you would be drawing folks to amend the Constitution.
Bingo.
Do we really want to have the Sidney Blumenthal's, the Dianne Feinstein's, the Maisie Hironos of the world with their hands on it?
Deciding who the delegates are, because that's what happens if you read Article 5. Okay, we're out of time for today. You know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.